Welcome to the Gurr in Fangirl podcast, a podcast where we discuss pop culture and fandom. Each episode, we talk with celebrities, fans, and creators about their work in the media that inspires them. Now here's your host, the creator of the Squee Project, filmmaker, fangirl, and feminist, Hansi Oppenheimer.
Hey, it's Hansi, and today is a special episode because I'm talking with one of my besties and the co-creator of the Squee Project, Dr. Lynn Zubernus. Her background in psychology has been a huge influence on the way I approach fandom in my documentaries. She has spent a dozen years researching her favorite show, Supernatural, interviewing both the stars and the fans, and has written numerous books, including Fangasm, Supernatural Fangirls, and Family Don't End in Blood. Basically, she's fucking awesome, so here we go.
So, hi. Do you want to just give a little rundown on who you are for the six people who don't know?
I'm sure there are more than six, and yes, I would be happy to. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Lynn Zubernus. I am a clinical psychologist and also a professor at Westchester University. But really, why I'm here today is because one of my research specialties is studying the psychology of fandom and being a fan. So I've written, I think, 7 books on the psychology of being a fan, and many of them have focused on the television show Supernatural, because that's what I am a very, very passionate fan of. So I've written a book with the cast members called Family Don't End with Blood, where fans and actors from the show all talked about how the show has changed their lives, maybe even saved their lives in a lot of ways. And then I've written a bunch of other books about the show.
One of my favorites, and I think, I don't know if I read the book before I met you or met you and then, but it was Fangasm, right? Supernatural Fangirls. Yeah.
I think you read that before you met me. Yeah, that's the one that's not a scholarly book at all, because it's just my own memoir of falling in love with this television show and saying, what the hell has happened to me? Why am I so obsessed with this television show? And then setting out on a wild and crazy adventure to find out what fandom is all about.
I love that book because it, you know, like when I read it, I was like, yeah, that's me. And I think
that's exactly why. Yeah. And so many people have said that because, I mean, one of the reasons that my co-author Kathy and I wrote that book was because when we started studying fandom as two professors, we couldn't find any research or writing that really seemed to capture our own experience, especially fandom for women. At that time, there was still so much shame around it. And, you know, could you really be a fangirl when you were an adult woman, you know, or had you just lost your mind? So we just told it like it was, warts and all. We just put it out there. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, my God, me too.
Yeah, because we all feel that sort of like, are we crazy? What am I doing here? Like, how, like,
yeah.
Well, it's such
a contrast to the way we as women are kind of socialized to think we should be. You know, we should be parents and we should be good partners and we should be serious about our jobs and, you know, all these things that really don't encourage you to just do something that's fun. Or to, you know, want to ogle, you know, some really good-looking people on the television or whatever it is. It's not what we think we should be doing. So it's hard to feel like it's okay.
Especially as older women. I mean,
especially,
so there's a
yeah.
sort of like, an, you know, sort of like a little bubble. Like, okay, teen girls can, you know, lose their mind over K-pop or Beatles or whatever is happening at the time. And even that is looked down on. You know,
oh, that's for sure looked down on, but at least it's not pathologized as, wow, there is something wrong with you. It's more like, oh, well, she's a teenager. She'll get over it, you know. But yeah, if you're old enough to know better, then what's your excuse?
I know that we shouldn't, like, our whole life should be about, like, taking care of other people or, you know, our relationship to other people, whether it's mom or a wife or, you know, whatever. There's so little space in, you know, in the world for women to just be like, I like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Or to, yeah, or to interact with other women and just say, wow, I can be more real here in my discussions with these other women who get it than I have been able to be in the rest of my life, because I was so focused on other people. I kind of forgot about, hey, who am I really and what do I really like?
Right. And unless it's something like shopping or, you know, the stereotypical things that women, you know, are, you know, it's okay for women to do. You know, we're
to do together, right?
Like, yeah, and it's just sort of like just such a mass marketing, like, oh, we know they will buy stuff, so we're just going to take advantage of that. Whereas if you spend money to go to a con or, you know, get a photo op, people are kind of like, oh, that's weird. Like, you're, you know.
Yeah, it's frivolous. It's not utilitarian. There's no good purpose for it. So how can you justify it? Although, you know, nobody really quibbles when people spend a lot of money to go to a Super Bowl game or take a vacation that costs $4,000 or what. I mean, people do spend their leisure money on things, but few things are as shamed for doing with your leisure time as fanish things are.
Which is so funny because it's been the most rewarding thing I think I've done in my, you know, adult life for myself.
I agree. I totally agree. And you know what? That's totally okay.
And all the friends we've made and the incredible community we're a part of. I mean, I've never been a part of a community that was so supportive and so loving. I mean, I can go to any con anywhere. And whether it's someone I've met before and we, you know, hang out, or I've never met them and we just start chatting on the line, and next thing you know, we're exchanging cards, we're friends.
Yes, which is what happened with us. I mean, we met because we were waiting in a line at a Comic-Con together, and I had on a Supernatural t-shirt, and that started a friendship, and that was like a decade ago.
Yeah, and we've worked on, you know, Squee together, and, you know, come to, you know, we've done panels together, and, you know, so
yeah, the creativity that comes out of like having a passion and interacting with other people who have a passion is incredible. I never would have done panels at Wizard Worlds and Comic Cons. I never would have, you know, co-produced and co-written a documentary film, for God's sake. I never would have done any of that, let alone published books. So yeah, it's, you know, when people say, oh, that's frivolous and nothing comes out of it. So many things come out of it. And they may not be as tangible as a documentary film or a published book or something, but they may be a connection of friendships, or they may be unleashing your creativity to draw again or paint again or write again or whatever it is. But that's worth something.
Yeah, absolutely. And so many of the women I know have, you know, made businesses out of it, whether it's, you know, merch or, you know, doing cons or panels or cosplay.
Yeah.
Or, I think it's a really amazing place for women. I don't know what the male side of this, you know, equation is. I suspect it's similar, but I think for women it's particularly freeing.
Yeah, I think women are still just a little more constrained. I also know men in fandom who have also unleashed their own creativity and written books or done cosplay and made that into a business, and they're definitely, or made films, whatever. So I think it is similar, but I think women have been a little more constrained, especially with things that are creative pursuits. So it is very freeing.
Yeah, and you immediately, like, because you love a similar thing, you immediately have an audience, which is just incredible to be able to put that out and know you have an audience that's supporting you. It gives you a certain confidence that you might not have had if you're just creating something original that's...
I don't think many people wouldn't have done it, because there wouldn't have been a way to reach any kind of audience, and, you know, you tend to be careful about those things, so.
And, you know, it gives you the confidence to be able to go off on, like, you know, I just did this horror film, and as soon as I'm done with the Gerald Lansdale documentary, I'm going to edit that, but that should come out like in the fall. And I never would have had the courage to make a narrative horror film because I've been doing documentary for 20 years. But it was like, hey, I love horror. Let's just do it. Let's do it.
That's the difference between feeling like you're living in a supportive community and not feeling like you're living in a supportive community. That's really, the fandom is such a fertile, nourishing ground for that because it does give you confidence because you do feel supported.
And everybody who participated, you know, whether it was acting or working on the film, were all people I knew through fandom, or except for one person who I'd met through my job, and she had been like a Renaissance costume person. And I was like, you have to look at cosplay. And now they're like hardcore like cosplayers who do Dragon Con every year.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, that was perfect, right? That was a no-brainer.
And they did all the effects for the horror film, and they did amazing effects. They're really, that's my friend Ayla and Jacob. They're amazing. But they're cosplayers.
I can't wait to see the film.
I know. I'm so excited. I just, I have the deadline for the Lansdale documentary to premiere. And
you have to do that first.
But we're doing really good. We have amazing interviews, like lots of big celebrities, James Purfoy, Bruce Campbell, all sorts of, huge names in it. And, I'm going to Nacogdoches next week to shoot Joe.
Awesome.
He's going to show me, his particular, like where he grew up and, locations.
That's
going to
be so cool. That is so exciting.
His daughter, Casey, who plays with John Carter Cash, she's doing the music for it. And then Yoshi Vu, who is a CGI generalist and has worked on Lucasfilms and all sorts of things. I met him at RebelCon and pitched, like, hey, would you want to work on a little project? And I just spoke to him yesterday. It's like, send me some drawings. I'll do some simple animations for you. So, like, again, fandom.
Wow. Oh, this is going to be amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
And like you said, you probably never would have thought to undertake such an ambitious thing if you didn't already have that confidence.
No. And at this point now, like, I can pretty much, I'll just email anybody and be like, hey, I'm doing this project. Do you want to be involved? And either they'll get back to me or they won't. But either way, it doesn't matter because it's like, okay. I can take that.
I mean, because the quote-unquote rejection is not going to, make you fall down and give up because you do have that confidence and you do have that support. And you already have, the project is in great shape. So people are icing on the cake at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Fandom's the best. I love fandom.
I do too. I really do too. Yeah. I've met the best people through fandom. It's
really
it's remarkable.
Like, and so many of the creative people you meet, actually in the industry too, are so supportive and so helpful about what they do and how they do it and willing to share that.
And now that I do feel like, there's of course still a divide between people who are in the, the quote unquote, what used to be called legitimate, actors and filmmakers, et cetera, and people who come, in the guerrilla sort of manner. But that divide is not so big anymore. People understand each other as doing similar things and caring about similar things and creatives on both sides of the fence. So I think that's made it easier as well. And I think that's good.
Well, because also there are so many more ways of distribution. You're not limited
just
in your network. So, a lot of people distribute on the internet and stuff. So the divide isn't quite as, segregated as it used to be.
No, not nearly. And even in publishing, traditional publishing is not the only way to disseminate your ideas either. So it's a different time. And I think organized fandom came about at the exactly right time to kind of take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. With the internet and accessibility to be able to reach out to people, that you might not have, been able to contact otherwise. You can write to a celebrity and, set designer
everything.
Or anything. And usually they're pretty like, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's still like there's not that many people reaching out to a lot of the creative people. So it's yeah, people are excited.
Yeah. So So I know Fangasm is particularly, you know, it's particularly important to me as a book because it's so like bare and honest. And but is would you say Family Don't End in Blood is the most successful of your books?
Yeah, it's certainly the most commercially successful. But I also think the reason why it's kind of it's the one that is my favorite. You might think Fangasm was my favorite because it's a memoir, like it's literally my story. And it was really important to me to write it and really wonderful to me that it helped a lot of people. But Family Don't End with Blood has just had such a wide reach because of the celebrity component. You know, a lot of people
sure.
picked it up because they just wanted to read what Jared Padalecki or Misha Collins or Jensen Ackles wrote in it. But then they read the whole book, and the whole book, every single chapter has got a message that will reach someone and be helpful to someone. Whatever you've struggled with in life, you're going to find somebody writing a chapter in Family Don't End with Blood that deals with that. So I just, as a psychologist, like my whole thing in life is I want to validate people. I want to help people feel okay about reaching out and getting help. You know, that's what Family Don't End with Blood has done. It has just reached so many people and made such a difference in people's lives. And that just feels wonderful to me. That means everything to me.
Yes. Yeah, so many of the, you know, the tweets and posts I've read about it, people are still like finding it. And being like, oh my God, when I read this, I like cried and this meant so much to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And people are still finding it. I mean, as much as, you know, I'm tapped into the Supernatural fandom, so you would think that the word would get out. I'm only the Supernatural fandom is so gigantic. I'm only tapped into a small segment of it. So there are still people all the time. I just answered two tweets in the last half an hour of people who just got the book. One who got the Brazilian edition because it's now been translated and it's for sale in Brazil. So she sent me a clip of that, and somebody else who tweeted just to tell me how much the book has meant to her. So it's still every day, and that's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to have that kind of longevity response to a project. That's you know, you can't buy that. That's just, you know, the work is that good.
It's still spreading little by little, which, yeah, it had quite a resurgence when Supernatural's news that next season was going to be their last season came out, because I think a lot of people really needed something to kind of hang on to get them through that, because it's a really traumatic thing when you've been involved in a fandom for 14, 15 years, and it's going to be, the source material is going to be going away. So a lot of people wanted to buy the book then, I think, as a way of, you know, remembering the show and remembering why it was so special.
So to turn this around, so like, I know that you've been doing a rewatch recently because you've been posting on Twitter,
yeah.
Where are you in your rewatch?
We have just started season four. So we're like 5 episodes into season 4. I think we'll be up to 7 episodes tonight. So it's incredibly ambitious. In the month of May, we did seasons 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of television watching and a lot of tweeting. So it's very time consuming, but I've been enjoying it so much more than I thought I would. I've never done a go back to the beginning and watch the entire show, you know, episode by episode. I've watched the series as it's played out pretty much live. So I've been once a week and hiatus and breaks, and you have to wait for the next season. I've watched it in the traditional way. So this is more like binge watching an entire show. And it's made watching the episodes so different.
Sure.
Coming. So
absolutely.
I keep
like
relating
the arcs
it.
They're very different by seeing, you know, it compressed like that, like, and
yeah.
You know what you're saying.
Yeah, so different.
Too, so.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And you pick up things that are significant, that end up being significant, that you didn't know were significant at the time. So that's different. But I think my main takeaway, I did a thing on King Book's YouTube channel, which was like a wrap-up of season 1 to 3. And my main takeaway is that, holy shit, this show is just incredible. Those first 3 seasons are so tight and so cohesive and so coherent and so emotional. I really was like blown away all over again by this show that I've been in love with for 14 years, which was really rejuvenating, actually.
It's a really interesting thing because, you know, I interviewed Bruce Campbell and then I interviewed James Purfoy. And they were both, I talked to both of them about, with Bruce Campbell, Ash vs. Evil Dead, and how great it was. And, you know, it was canceled after 3 seasons. And James Purfoy,
yeah,
for Happened Leonard, again, brilliant, but 3 seasons. And Bruce Campbell's attitude was kind of like, 3 years these days is a success. You know, so,
yeah,
and then
no,
he
he's
did
right.
say,
yeah,
like, you know, he did say, like, you know, he talked to Joe, who, you know, also, you know, Happen Leonard was based on Joe Lansdale's series. And he's like, you know, I talked to Joe and it's like, do we even want to be in this business anymore?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a stressor when it's so hard to have any longevity.
And then James Purfoy's attitude was like, you know, hey, we're really proud that we did, you know, whatever it was, 18 great episodes, you know, and I'm proud of that. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Supernatural is, I mean, there's, how many shows, except unless you go back to maybe the 60s, like Bonanza or something, have lasted this long? Very few.
Very, very few. Very, very few. And I think it's the only genre show that has lasted this long. The other ones have been in some different genre, you know, like the medical drama, you know, Grey's Anatomy
or
something.
Trek, or
Bonanza.
And even
or,
that was rejiggered on a regular basis, so.
Yeah, and I still don't think, even with all the Star Treks, they don't have as many as Supernatural, even if you glob them all together, which is really ridiculous, I think. So
yeah, maybe
it's,
except for
it's a
like
phenomenon.
LA Law, or, you know, Law and Order.
Right, yeah, those
is.
Procedural,
I mean,
kind of shows, there are some that went longer, but very, very few.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, genre TV is my favorite, you know. I mean, I love, like, horror and fantasy. Those are, like, the best. And so what do you think is the secret behind, you know, Supernatural success? I mean, even after Eric Kripke left, that at least still were able to maintain quality and go forth. And what do you think?
I mean, I think part of it was the groundwork that Kripke laid in those first 5 seasons. I think those first 5 seasons were such amazing, amazing quality television. And like you said, you can make an amazing quality show and it still ends after 3 seasons. But
right.
It was a combination of that early quality being so high that pulled in such loyalty from viewers. And I really think the other thing that did it was that they realized early on that what really the hook was for the show was not the monster of the week and all that stuff. That was great icing, and they were making a quality little horror mini movie every week. But what really pulled people in was the emotional content and the relationship between those brothers. And later, the relationship between the brothers and Castiel, who was also just a brilliantly written character. Those 3 characters, people resonated with those characters and with their relationships with each other. And that really made people care about the show. And that loyalty translated into all kinds of things that managed to keep the show on the air, you know, winning People's Choice Awards and in the early days, letter writing campaigns and buying merch and conventions. Making conventions successful. It all sort of came together. And I really think I give Eric Kripke so much credit because when he ran that writer's room, it really was him running that writer's room. And he pulled people into the writer's room who could write the characters in the way that he envisioned them. And I really think that a lot of it is due to him. And the last thing is the actors. The casting in that show is just off the charts. And to cast 3 people like Jensen, Jared, and Misha, I mean, and that's even leaving out all the other amazing casting, you know, Jim Beaver and I mean, just so many people, but I mean, almost everyone, almost every single person that has been cast in that show has been incredible. But Jared Jensen and Misha are probably some of the best actors anybody is ever going to run into. And that has also made a huge amount of difference.
Yeah, it's true. You don't realize how good they are.
No, you really don't. Sorry, I just screamed thank you to the UPS man who just delivered a box of books for Wizard World next weekend.
But you don't realize how good they are, especially in the first couple seasons, until you see, like, you know, how different their characters are, you know, over the 15 years. Like, you know, they get to play so many different versions of their characters, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, they can pretty much do anything.
They're incredibly versatile, and I think part of the reason that people just were so drawn to these characters is because, I'll talk about Jensen and Jared separately, because in the rewatch, Castiel that I'm doing, Castiel has just appeared, but the same is going to apply for Misha later. But Jared and Jensen, from moment one, are the kind of actors that were really willing to be incredibly vulnerable. You know, for the kind of characters they're playing, these sort of, you know, grew up as hunters, brothers, they showed so much emotion. And a lot of it was because, you know, brilliantly, they were brothers. So they were allowed to show emotion even to each other. And I think that really, you know, they were so human. I mean, Dean cries and tears up like fairly early on in the series. And I remember being so shocked by the fact that, like, whoa, wait, I thought this was like a macho stereotype, but hold on, what show am I watching? This is something completely different. So they took those characters that Kripke wrote so beautifully and just enriched them in such incredible ways, because they're very fearless actors.
I just interviewed Dee Wallace.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll post her this week. And, you know, we talked about a lot of things, but of course I had to bring up, like, I loved you as Mildred. You were amazing on Supernatural. And she's like, it was such an amazing set because you were welcomed into this family and everyone knew their stuff and you felt completely safe. And I was like, okay, so that's what we're seeing is what is.
Yeah, and literally everyone, I must have interviewed at this point, like, literally hundreds of guest actors who've worked on Supernatural, and every single person talks about how different the set is, and that, you know, it comes from the top, that the lead actors set this up as a precedent. Like, they take this seriously, they have tons of fun, but they take it seriously, and they care. Total pros, and they're generous with guest cast, and they make sure that they're in a space where they can do their best acting, and I think that's what comes through. So it's all those things.
How are you coping with the end of this?
It's interesting. Like, I think you have, like, two choices. You can either let it hit you right away and start your grieving early so that you can kind of hopefully space it out. Or you can sort of be in denial and say, look, we still got a year. I'm not grieving now. I'm going to wait. And, I mean, fans have gone in different directions, and actors have gone in different directions. And you can even see the difference between Jared and Jensen, because it sort of hit Jared right away, and he started grieving. And Jensen, when I asked him about it, was like, not going there, not going there. Be quiet. Stop talking. Not going there. So they've even dealt with it differently, which I think is good, because then they can, like, support each other through the different hard times, because it's going to hit Jensen sooner or later. But for me, I think I'm trying to do a combination. Like, I let myself grieve it in little bits and pieces. And, you know, there will be times when I'm doing the rewatch when it just strikes me, oh, my God, I have 20 more of these episodes, and then I don't have Sam and Dean. Sam and Dean kind of don't exist anymore. And then that's so hard for me to think about that I just push it aside and say, well, let's just watch the next episode now, and let's just look forward to season 15. So I'm kind of vacillating back and forth so that it doesn't get too overwhelming, I think.
Yeah, I was really hit hard because I had just been at Family Business the day before. they announced it. So I was, I was in Houston. We'd gone to Austin, went to Manly Business. And then the next day I'm at RebelCon and I, you know, pull up the post and I'm just like, wait, no, I was just there. That can't happen.
Yeah, no, like, shock and denial. That's totally the first thing that happens. Yeah, shock and denial. That can't be possible. Yeah. I think a lot of fans,
when's the new book coming out? What were you in the process? When can we look for it?
I'm hoping that we will wrap it up by like the end of the summer, beginning of fall, and I'm hoping that it will come out by the time the series ends, but we'll sometime around then. That's the planned timing. And I don't have a title yet, so I can't even tell you the title, but if you follow me on social media, Fangasm SPN, you'll start hearing about it pretty soon.
Yeah, once you have a publication date, come back on the show and we'll promote it.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then I can talk more about the specific chapters and who's writing them and what they touch on.
Yeah, we're dying to hear
that. I have some great chapters. Yeah, no, I can't really talk about it yet, but I have quite a few of the chapters already, and they're pretty incredible. So that's exciting. I was going to say, in terms of what you asked about support groups too, I think as this year goes on, you know, as we start into the last season, I think I intend to sort of be more active in providing, putting together a sort of support community for the fandom, because I do think it's going to be a very hard year. It's going to be hard for the cast. It's going to be hard for the fans. So that's coming too. I haven't really thought about format, but I feel sometimes like I'm the unofficial fandom psychologist. So I'll try to step up to the plate and...
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, something like a message board or, a special space on your website or something where people can just write in and you can advise them or just, you know, comfort them or talk to them or.
Yeah, and I think I'll share my own journey as well, which is validating to people. So every, you know, I write episode reviews for every episode anyway. So I think I'll include more of. Thank you. I love writing them. And I think I'll include more of, you know, my own reaction to each and how, you know, how that is dovetailing in with my dealing with, okay, this is number 20. Oh, that's 19. That's 18. I mean, the whole year is going to be a countdown. So I'll try to share my own experience as a way of helping other people.
Is there anything else you want to say to add to the podcast before we wrap it up?
Nope. I think I actually ended up talking about everything that I wanted to let people have a heads up about. So, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Love you, honey.
All right. Love you too. I'm off to work. Have a good day.
All right. You too. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye, babe.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Gurr in Fangirl. If you enjoyed our show, be sure to visit our website, www.squeeprojects.com, where you can subscribe to the podcast and our YouTube channel for lots more squee as fuck pop culture content.